This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
It's great to have Dr. Bob Murphy with us today. Bob is the author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Capitalism, and he has a forthcoming book also from Regnery, The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Depression and the New Deal. Unfortunately, Bob, all too timely a topic.
Well, yeah, exactly, and it's that's part of why we want to get this book out, is to try to counter all these comparisons people are making, because it's actually true that, in a sense, George Bush is like Herbert Hoover, and we can only fear that Obama's going to be like FDR, but of course, from our point of view, that those are bad things to say, not good things.
You know, it seems like the Keynesians are getting everything they want this time. I mean, they sometimes, to me, hilariously criticize FDR as having been too stingy. He didn't spend enough. He didn't encourage the Fed to inflate enough. But certainly this time, they're doing everything they want. They're getting everything they want. Somehow, I think we're not going to get the prosperity and happiness they're promising us.
Well, they're already, as I'm sure you know, they're already setting themselves up for that eventuality that Paul Krugman has been saying, that, you know, that this really isn't enough stimulus. So, again, it's going to be non-falsifiable. No matter what happens, they're going to say it just was too little, too late. But you're right. That is the standard approach they use. They say that during the 30s, you know, FDR still, for some misguided reason, believed in balanced budgets and so forth, which is a bit silly. But in any event, you're right. They're doing right now what they say that they're supposed to do. And in particular, this, if nothing else, this whole episode will be able to separate out the sort of supply-side monetarist explanation of what happened from the Austrian explanation, because now it's going to be crystal clear that what Bernanke has done is to try to prevent what he thinks caused the depression, which, you know, in his mind, following Milton Friedman, was that the Fed didn't inflate enough, that it just sat back passively and let the market collapse and the money supply collapse. Well, certainly no one can accuse Bernanke of doing that.
Bob, why don't you go over for us, since you mentioned it, what are the differences between the Austrian explanation for the Great Depression and what followed, and the monetarist and the supply side one?
Well, sure. So one thing, let's just, you know, they do agree, of course. I mean, everybody is against the Smoot-Hawley tariff, and Hoover jacked up tax rates incredibly in 1932. So both of those free market schools, of course, are going to say those things kicked the economy while it was down. But in terms of explaining, you know, why did the crash happen in the first place? Why was the economy in such a precarious position where the Smoot-Hawley tariff and then the general tax hikes were able to push it down into the depths of the Depression? The Austrian school, of course, says that what happened is the Fed was inflating throughout the 20s, and in particular after about 1927 it really turned it up because it was trying to help Great Britain, and that went hand-in-hand with the booming stock market, and as Mises said in 1928, every boom must come to an end, and that's, you know, what goes up has to come down if it's unsustainable. And that's the Austrian position, that, you know, you want to say, why did it crash in 29 and not 6 months after, 6 months sooner? You might look at the Fed's policies and tightening, but clearly the fact that it was an unsustainable boom was caused by the Fed inflating the credit markets with fiat money. The supply-side monetarists, on the other hand, what they say is that, no, the 20s were fine. The Fed was actually being fairly tight with monetary policy, and because, look at, you know, consumer prices were fairly flat throughout the whole decade. And they say that, you know, what happened in terms of the immediate crash was that the Fed tightened in 28 and 29, and that's what caused the crash. And then in terms of why did that turn into the Great Depression, they argue it's because the Fed sat back passively while the money supply fell by a third over a few years there. And so, you know, Milton Friedman's explanation is if the Fed had just aggressively flooded the market and provided liquidity, they would have gotten over that minor downturn just like in all previous depressions.
Bob, there was a lot of controversy in the last few days when Jim Rogers, the great investment advisor, said that people should get their money out of the British pound, should get their money out of the UK, because he thought that the British state was going to go bankrupt. And there's a lot of other commentary I notice in the English papers as well. And some of it is partisan. They just don't like Gordon Brown. In my view, the Tories aren't much better than the Labour Party, but seems to me we follow Britain in so many ways, whether it's in terms of empire or in terms of, in recent days, in the police state. They seem to get worse sooner than we do. Is it actually possible for the British state to go bankrupt? And what are the troubles caused by these horrendous bailouts of the banks that Britain is engaging in? What does that have to say for our future?
Well, so to answer your question, yes, it certainly is possible. I mean, we remember Russia defaulted in the late 90s, and that's what was the immediate cause of the long-term capital management collapse. So it is possible for a modern nation state, a major government, to not be able to make its bond payments. So the issue is, though, would it just resort to the printing press to get out of it? Because that's ultimately what these governments can do. And it depends. You know, the calculus that they have to make, they want to say, are we going to hurt our interests long-term more by just openly defaulting or by resorting to the printing press, which investors would realize was, in a sense, cheating out of, to get out of it. But what's interesting is even the United States government, the numbers I saw recently, in terms of looking at credit default swap contracts, so contracts that in the event that the U.S. Treasury defaults on its bond payments, the contracts insuring against that event, those things, by the changes in their prices, they've figured that the event of the U.S. government doing that within the next 10 years is now placed at about 6%, whereas just a year ago it was only 1%. So, you know, and loosely speaking, it's as if the government is now six times more likely to default than people thought just a year ago because of all these bailouts and so on. So it's true. I mean, the government cannot create true wealth, and if it hands out trillions of dollars at this point in terms of guarantees it's making to the banks, and those banks have made losses, I mean, that money has to come from somewhere. And ultimately, yes, they can try to raise taxes, but at some point there's a limit to that. There's going to be open tax revolts, if nothing else. And so the government's going to have to decide, do we turn off the spigot and cut off the banks, or do we openly default?
What do you think is going to happen?
I'm not as confident or as aware of the British situation, so I'm not really sure what's going to happen over there. I do think in the United States, I mean, my guess is they're going to go with inflation. I mean, they might. I don't think the U.S. Treasury would openly just default on its normal conventional debt issue. I think what they might do is try to fudge on the margins. So, for example, with the TIPS contracts, which are the Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, they might do things like tinker with the way the CPI is calculated to understate the inflation so that really they're not actually paying, you know, they're not actually honoring those contracts, but it wouldn't be an open default. It would be sort of, you know, cheating to pay investors less. So that's what I think they'll do. But ultimately, in terms of the U.S., I think the Fed is going to be the one to take the hit, as it were, because it could just create money out of thin air.
Well, I know in Britain, one of the problems they've got is that they just don't, it's just apparently incapable of bailing out the banks. So vast are the troubles of the banks. What about in this country? I mean, can they actually, of course, we're now, you know, talking about a new TARP and all kinds of new bailout programs under the Obama administration, as well as, of course, more stimuli and all the rest of that sort of thing. But can they actually do it? I mean, or will they actually let it get to a Weimar situation? These are guesstimates, of course, right?
No one wants to make wild predictions that then turn out to not be true. But, I mean, I've been on the bandwagon lately just pointing. I mean, you've seen the graph, and I'm sure many of your listeners have seen the charts put out by the St. Louis Fed just looking at the bank reserves and so on. For a financial newsletter, I just did a back-of-the-envelope calculation, and I was trying to, the person wanted to know if the euro or the dollar was in bigger trouble. And I discovered that the last 3 months, the bank reserves for the eurozone have increased at an annualized rate of about 25%. And I thought, well, gee, that seems kind of high. And let's see what it is for the Fed. For the Federal Reserve, over the last 3 months, the annualized rate of increase of bank reserves has been 400,000%. And I triple-checked the numbers to make sure I wasn't doing something wrong there, but bank reserves in September were around $100 billion and change, and then by December they had gone up to $800 billion, so they increased by a factor of 8 in 3 months. So, you know, you do the math, that's a pretty big annual rate of increase. So, I mean, I don't think Bernanke is insane. I mean, he's not going to, in my opinion, sit back and allow 100% inflation for very long, but he's really painted himself into a corner because the reason he's injected so much into the banking sector is, of course, he's giving the banks reserves, and then the collateral for that is all these so-called toxic mortgage-backed securities and other assets that no one in the private sector wants to hold. And so if inflation really does, price inflation starts to get out of control, Bernanke's going to have a choice. He can say, all right, I'm going to suck reserves out of this system, but then that's going to leave the banks with these assets that really aren't very valuable, and then the banks will have to be declared insolvent at that point. I mean, that's really the thing that's going on, is the reason we've got these so-called zombie banks, that they're just sitting on the reserves, is that they're really insolvent, in terms of if you look at their books and attached true market prices to their assets, right now they don't have any capital. They, like I say, they're insolvent, and so it's really just been a giant game the last year or so with the Fed allowing them to carry these things on their books at above market value so that they appear to still be in operation when really there's nothing going on. There's no true economic value being provided by them. And so it's tricky. I don't know exactly how it's going to play out, but I think we're probably going to get the worst of both, where the banks are going to basically either be nationalized outright or just completely administered by the government, even though still staying in private hands. And I think we're going to get the biggest price inflation that we've ever had in the United States.
Wow. And of course, I'm going to ask you another question that's impossible for you to answer. But we know that the Nixon administration didn't hesitate to impose price and wage controls in 1971. Is that a possibility for this regime as well?
Yeah, it is. And actually, it was Peter Schiff who first on your podcast, actually, that alerted me to that aspect of the situation. But of course, it almost seems obvious to me that that's going to happen. If things do play out in terms of money and prices the way I think they're going to, then obviously the compassionate President Obama, it seems to me, is going to impose price controls on greedy businesses and so forth to keep them from profiteering and taking advantage of the situation while people are hurting. And I wouldn't have been so confident in saying that a year ago, but I live in Nashville, and even here there was the storms over the summer, and we literally had gas lines here. There were cars at the gas stations lined up out to the street. Every other gas station was closed, and the reason for that was that the local governments here, they were being very aggressive in warning gas stations, you better not raise prices because of the refinery interruptions because of the hurricane. And so in Nashville and a few other places in the South, is my understanding that there were gas lines. And I had kind of thought that free market economists had done a good job of explaining to people why that happened in the 70s. But apparently we failed on that front too, because even at my church and just listening to casual conversation around town, there weren't a lot of people who were mad at price controls. They were mad at the greedy oil companies who were sticking it to us with $4 gas and then now not even selling it to us.
Same thing happened in Atlanta. There were tremendous gas lines all over the whole Atlanta area. And, yeah, people were blaming they hated the gas station owners. They hated the oil companies. And nobody was blaming the actual villains, the politicians.
Right. And this whole episode and everything about it really, in a sense, is demoralizing, not just in terms of what the politicians are doing and getting away with, but just the fact that we clearly, the free market economist, classical liberal school, we haven't really done a good job of educating the people. Now, maybe it's they actually know this stuff and they were just scared and they forgot what they already knew, but I was very surprised with the gas lines that, you know, I understand the average person at Walmart might not know about price controls and the effects of it, but even in terms of the financial press and the commentary, that it wasn't just obvious to people that the reason we were getting gas lines was because of price control. I was surprised at how little recognition of that fact there was.
Well, how much of that is actually due to ignorance and how much is due to statism? I mean, people who actually think that the state ought to actually be in control of everything, including prices.
Yeah, it's hard to not get really pessimistic, isn't it? Like I say, whatever the ultimate explanation, whether it just showed how much the state controls the media, or whether it just shows the true level of ignorance among the professional commentators, I don't know. But it did really reflect well how much work we have to do. And of course, just more generally, the fact that now the official narrative is in, Greenspan has admitted, you know, Greenspan, the arch-conservative free marketeer, has admitted that he was wrong for thinking markets were self-regulating, and that chapter is closed now. Bush tried deregulation. It failed and caused a housing boom, and now President Obama is going to do a business-government partnership and try to bring compassion back. I mean, that's now the official narrative, and I think a lot of people believe it.
Well, thanks to you for helping educate people to the extent that people know anything. It's because of economists like you. So, Bob Murphy, thanks for coming on today, and I want to recommend your book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Capitalism, and we hope you'll come back and talk to us when it comes out, The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Great Depression and the New Deal.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Mr. Rockwell.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. Thanks for listening.